Pizza podcast over here. I got a really, really, really special guest today. I got my main man, Louis Tremini. I used to work under this dude. He's the owner of Ignazio's Pizza. And I know he looks a little bit like a hippie, but he's definitely one of the most Brooklyn guys out there and has like some of the most amazing stories I've ever been told in the history. You know what I'm saying? Of this game. Me and Louis definitely been through some times and stuff like that. So, and Ignazio's is right next to Grimaldi's Pizza Dumbo.
Excuse me.
Okay.
Right next to the Brooklyn Bridge.
The Brooklyn Bridge.
Under the Brooklyn Bridge, next to Grimaldi's. They're around the corner.
Yeah.
You know, and I only had the brains to move around the corner from them, not next door. But they were alone there for 10 years or 15 years. So my godson called me. I had moved out of Brooklyn. I went to Connecticut for restaurants. And he said, come down and try Grimaldi's. I said, nah. I said, I should be there. So I went down. We got online. 20 people online. The pizza was good. We came out. There was 100 people online. It made me sick.
Right. It wasn't that good.
It was good enough, but not for 100. So anyway, what bothered me, because what he's doing in one day, I did all week in one of my restaurants in Connecticut, even though I'm from Brooklyn. So I went back to Connecticut and I said, let me out of here. But on the way home, I don't know what home was, Brooklyn or Connecticut, but I was all, I got a premonition and I called my godson up and I said, go back around the block, walk around Grimaldi's. And he calls me back and says, you're not going to believe this. So I said, really? What did I send you there for? The landlord is putting a sign in the window, space available, around the corner from Grimaldi's, under the Brooklyn Bridge.
And so that's when Pete's was still there.
Yeah, Pete's downtown. So I said, grab that landlord, make an appointment, I'm turning around, I'm coming back. I meet the landlords, Italian and a Jew.
Okay.
I'm Italian. I look Jewish. I had it made with these two guys.
You know what they say about Italians and Jews, right? Same corporation, different divisions.
Well, my grandfather told me that when they were getting tortured by a certain nationality on the Lower East Side when they immigrated from Sicily, and the same with the Russian Jews, they got together one night.
Oh, yeah.
It was the beginning of...
A lot of historical shit. We all know.
So back to the pizza restaurant. So I'm talking to the landlord, Italian and a Jew, and they're looking at me. They're confused. So I said, don't worry. I'm your rabbi, and I'm your rabbi. And the God of Abraham sent me here to be your tenant. So I said under my breath, dear God, please let me have this. I'll be good for 2 weeks. At that moment, the landlord started blinking, biblically blinking like they were out of it. And I said, thank you, dear God. I had a 20-year lease in 45 minutes.
Wow.
At a rent that the...
In Dumbo in, I mean, what was it, 8 years ago you opened?
In 2008.
2008, so 10 years now.
So the rent was a little difficult, but I knew that if I took that rent, I would kick it in. And now the rent is worth four times.
Oh, yeah, easy.
Four times.
Well, when you opened, they didn't have that Brooklyn Bridge Park. They had none of that over there yet. The only thing
there was Grimaldi's and the Brooklyn Bridge.
That was it.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
And the rats were the same size as the Italian breads.
And you saw it coming and you made a good move. You took a calculated risk.
What I saw was 100 people online at Grimaldi's. That's enough.
Yeah.
So I got this 20-year lease. The landlord thought he was raping me. God bless the landlord. So now the rent, the lease is worth four times what it is, and I got 10 more years to go.
So you got like by the way, for you guys that didn't see, like, you know, like, Louis, he's got a spot in downtown Brooklyn called Ignazio's. But you started way before that in this business, right? You have like a rich history in this business. So like,
okay.
I think you're one of the people in this industry that nobody knows about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The New York Times doesn't know we exist.
Right.
And but...
You've never done PR at all?
I couldn't afford a publicist when I opened because they wanted $5,000 to $10,000 a year to get your name in the paper.
Sure.
I haven't been in the paper in 10 years.
That's the game.
But I'm the second busiest pizzeria in New York City.
New York City?
New York City, next to Grimaldi's?
Yeah, next to Grimaldi's. Right, they the second busiest pizzeria downtown Brooklyn.
So I don't have time for publicity because the people from all around the world, every country, they're coming in. And, like, for example, a family from Milano comes to the door. Occasionally I'm hosting, and the father says, our friends in Milano said in New York, go to Ignazio's. Oh, I was incredible.
Right.
I get after hearing that, I'm tired of hearing people telling me they love my pizza. That was the compliment of all time. A family from Milano saying, go to Ignazio's. Because Italians think they know it better than we do.
Ah, you know, Italians are no different than us at the end of the day. Some of them know.
To get back to the Italian-Jewish thing, today customers from Israel came in. And they told me, this is the best pizza, we loved it. We live in Garden City now. So I said, no, I want to open in Tel Aviv. So I said, let's make a deal. Call somebody in Tel Aviv. She said, I like that idea. So I said, I'm going to be sitting by my phone shaking like a leaf until I get a call from Tel Aviv.
Bro, if you throw in one of those, throw on one of those cheese hats, you know, like one of those hot seats.
I can pass.
I said, yeah, you'll pass all day. So... let me ask you, what was your, like, I know your story, like, we've talked, like, you know, I used to work for Louis, by the way, guys, so back in the day. That was an experience. That was an experience. Louis' crazy, like, matches my crazy, so...
So it worked out.
But what was your first pizzeria? Like, how did you break into this game? Like, I know the story, but I don't really know the story. It's like one of those, like, mythical things that, like, I'm telling the story
wrong. When I was a kid in the neighborhood, Bath Beach, Brooklyn, there were no pizzerias.
Okay.
I mean, I'm 70 years old now.
Year is that?
In the early 50s, there were no pizzerias that I knew of.
Correct.
The bakeries, the Italian bakeries, they made a big tray of Sicilian pizza.
Sure.
That was gorgeous. It was Rex Bakery. Rex Bakery on 86th Street, there was nothing like that. A coal oven Sicilian pizza. My father would take us there on a Sunday. We'd bring it over to Grandma's, and something happened to me. Like, I said, what is this? This is so incredible. So that began
your love affair with pizza.
Yeah, my mother and my grandmother made some home-style pizzas at home. Sure. And then when it was a blizzard, she made English muffin pizza like everybody else's mother.
Okay.
And which I still love. I treat my staff like a couple of times a year to an English muffin pizza, and I love it. I love it still, too.
You're actually one of the best operators I've ever seen as far as, like, taking care of your staff. Like, one of the fondest memories I have from working with you, besides, like, you were hard. Like, you're hard on dudes. But one of the fondest memories...
I'm a hard on? What'd you say?
Yeah, you're hard on people. But one of the fondest memories I have of you is those, like, sit-downs between lunch and dinner where you would cook that meal. You know, that's super healthy. Like,
okay,
it's
not that I'm that nice. I got to feed my staff to make them strong, to keep working good.
Yeah, so we don't, like, pass out. Yeah, I know.
But my mother cooked all the time. So I followed her lead, and I cooked for the workers, cooked for my staff, and they love it. I love it, and I cook everything that my mother cooked for us at home, and now I do the same thing at work. And actually, there's no such thing as work because I live there.
What was really amazing about some of those meals that you would cook is you didn't have a kitchen. You don't have any burners, or at least you didn't when I was there.
No, we don't have a stove.
You were cooking rice in a forno or what are they called? A Vero forno oven.
Yeah.
You were cooking rice in a pizza oven. I remember that.
I taught myself how to cook everything in a pizza oven. This oven's from Italy. It's a gas-fired oven, but... It's an incredible oven.
I bought that oven for Williamsburg Pizza from working with you. Now I'm like, now I'm done with those. But
I mean, prior to that, which prior is a too big a word for me, actually. But before that, I used wood-fired ovens in the restaurants that I had in Connecticut. And I'm not from Connecticut, even though I was there 28 years. I'm from Bath Beach, Bay 13th.
Right.
Bay 13th and
well,
Bath
so, Avenue. So that's a story that, like, I don't know the real details to. Like, what... Like, you had this chain of restaurants in Connecticut. Like, where was the first... Like, how did that start?
Okay, so I'm...
You didn't have any... You never had a restaurant in New York before Ignazio's, correct?
No. My grandfather had a bar on the Bowery. My father inherited the bar.
Bowery and what?
Bowery and 4th Street.
Okay.
At that time, there was an elevated subway there.
Really?
Yeah. And there were thousands of alcoholics on the sidewalk. And the bar was a Bowery bum bar. And my father would take me there when I was 7, 8 years old. And that's one reason why I never got drunk in my life so far. Plus, my mother and father only drank on the holidays. So the bar was filled with screaming alcoholics, scared me. And then in the neighborhood, which was later to become the East Village, musicians, artists started moving in the middle 50s. And two jazz musicians were living upstairs above the bar. And they used to come to the bar after their gigs. And one night they took out their instruments and started playing at 3-4 in the morning. And they talked my father into buying a piano. And within 2-3 weeks, it became a world-famous progressive jazz nightclub for 20 years called the Five Spot Cafe.
Five Spot Cafe.
John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Art Blakey, Thelonious Monk. Actually,
What years are we talking right now? Like 1956. 56.
56, 57, wow. 58. The jazz cool years. And Thelonious Monk played there for 6 months straight.
Thelonious Monk.
That was
brother, like, is a Berkeley-trained musician, super into music. Yeah. My family's all musicians. My father, I mean, but he turned me on to Thelonious Monk. Like, fucking, you like, saw him.
I started, like, seeing Thelonious Monk 50... when I was 10 years old. And I said, what is this? I can't take it. And then after a few years, I was whistling Monk tunes on the way to school.
Jesus. Yeah.
So little did my father know, a real family man, Sicilian man, that I was being influenced by this exposure to interracial couples.
Okay.
Usually you see a blonde white woman with a black man, but at the age of 11, I saw white men with black women and vice versa.
Which was crazy
back
then.
You never saw a white man with a black woman.
You never saw it outside of, like, the West Village, Bowery.
I said, oh, that looks good. Now, and men with long hair in the 50s, you never saw that anywhere. These were beatniks, men with beards. So my father didn't realize that he was turning me into a future hippie. Which
so your father's like this hardcore Sicilian dude.
He was a real family man.
Yeah.
Real traditional.
And this was his business, but, like, he didn't really... He was old school. He didn't really condone what was going on there. It was like, this is a business, this is to make money.
Right. The music,
that old school attitude.
His music was big band era from the 40s. And this club.
What he liked to listen to, you mean?
What he listened to was the big band music. So this music was progressive jazz on the cutting edge of avant-garde. And it was music that was hard to listen to at first, but it grew on me. And the whole atmosphere.
But did he ever get into that? Like, did he ever?
Well, after 20 years of listening to he got affectionate to the music.
Sure. Yeah, it took like 20 years. It took 10 years.
So what happened from that? He had a coat check room that was on the street side. So he cut a window and put a pizza oven there in front of the jazz club.
This part I don't know.
Yeah, this is how it started. He put a pizza oven there, and this was a unregistered, unlicensed addition to the business that was untaxed for 20 years. And in the basement, he plugged in the electricity and the gas behind a brick wall that nobody knew about. So it was rent-free, gas-free, electric-free for 20 years, and it helped him support the family.
Okay.
And... So he passed away now, so you can't sue him.
What kind of oven? He was using like a deck Bowery oven?
Yeah, that's right, a Bowery oven. And
which Bowery ovens is like down the street from...
Yeah.
You know?
So they made They made more money in 1 year with the pizza than they did in 20 years with the Jazz.
Really?
Yeah, so I said, whoa, I could do that. I said, I want to be a farmer when I grow up. I'll open a pizza so I can buy a farm. And so then I worked for my dad for a while, and I learned...
Were making pizza, like, in this...
I learned from one of his pizza men that came over from Sicily. My father gave him his first job and became friends with him. And then I worked for him for a while. My father kicked me out when my hair got too long. My dad was going to retire, and he said, do you want the business? I said, no. I said, I'm in my 20s. This is Woodstock Nation. I don't even want to work, Dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of here.
So, you were a beatnik.
So the beatnik generation was what I was exposed to. The hippie generation was the next generation, my generation.
Okay.
So it's hard to be a hippie from Bath Beach.
I feel like it's an easy slide from like beatnik to hippie,
that was
like
the
decade
transition.
To decade.
But back in
like,
the neighborhood,
back
in the neighborhood, the kids they used to look at me and say, what is this?
Y-O, what are you doing?
So
head.
I had to, but in 2 years, the whole country went hippie, and all the tough guys, they wanted to hang out with me.
Because you were good at the girls, right?
I was afraid of girls. I didn't learn how to talk until I was 30.
Yeah, but there was a lot of girls around in like that, thing, right?
Yeah,
free
yeah.
love and banging everybody out. Like, I don't know, I wasn't there, but I could only imagine. Like, I've seen like some movies and stuff.
Always a one man, one woman guy.
I've always been like that too. It's weird. Like, people think like, because I'm a nut job, like they always think like I'm like going out there, I'm like banging every board on the fucking block. I've never been like that though. It's weird.
No, same with me. But anyway, so what I decided to do was retire at age 19. So I retired for 11 years.
You retired?
I retired. The American dream, retire at 65. No, it doesn't make sense. And at that time, the country was so wild with this counterculture. Who could work?
Sure.
Who could buckle down and work? So
I have no fucking idea, but I'm going to take your word for it.
I was an artist, a photographer. I had the pizza restaurant skills. So I hung out and worked part-time. But when the first child came along, I turned into my dad. I started working at 31, 32 years old.
We're talking about Valerie?
Vanessa. Two daughters. So
yeah.
I said, how am I going to support this family? So I turned into basically my dad. And I
worked. How old are you then?
I was in my early 30s.
Early 30s, Valerie's born.
Vanessa and Valerie are both born 3 years apart.
Vanessa's born.
Took a job at the World Trade Center as the pizza chef at Merrill Lynch's world headquarters.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
so
you're in your 30s?
Yeah. I'm making pizza at Merrill Lynch in the World Trade Center.
No, you're in your 40s.
No. I'm in my early, my middle, 32, 33.
How old are you?
I'm 70.
Okay, so Vanessa is 33.
Vanessa's 33. And Valerie's 30 next week.
Right.
So one of the stockbrokers who loved my pizza said, get a hold of the New York Times and start looking for a job. The stock market is about to have a big problem, so I'm giving you a heads up. Black Tuesday was about to hit, and the stock market was going to be disrupted. So I found a job.
This is in the 80s. This is the 80s recession
Black Tuesday,
that happened. Yeah,
Black
okay.
Tuesday, bad market. So I looked in the New York Times and it said Avon Pizza Want, a New York style pizza wanted Avon, Connecticut. In 3 weeks at age 35, I relocated out of Brooklyn for the first time in my life to Avon, Connecticut and working for a restaurant that had a slow business and the owner was from New Jersey and he wanted New York style pizza. I connected with him, worked there for a year, became pretty well known, saved my money, and opened the first wood-fired oven in Hartford, Connecticut, in the old Italian neighborhood.
Wood-fired.
I had it built 10 feet by 12 feet interior. Big oven, big wood-fired.
Now,
oven.
What year are we at right now?
1989.
So you had it built by...
By a mason from the neighborhood. It was an Italian neighborhood that was in... in transition. So I put a sign in the window.
What kind of pizzas were you making, though? Like New York style or like...
New York style. New York style pizzas with fresh mozzarella.
Okay.
Similar to Tatone.
Right.
Yeah, by the
old New York style. Okay. Like speaking Lombardi.
Speaking of old New York style Lombardi, my father grew up 3 blocks from the original Lombardi, and he told me that he ate there as a kid with the original Lombardi coal oven. I said, "What was it like, Dad?" He said, "Fresh mozzarella in the coal oven, and the owner on Sundays had a classical harpist in the small dining room of like 5 to 10 tables."
I said, really?
So I said, "How did he make the pizza?" He said, "He put the mozzarella down, he spooned the sauce over it, put it in the coal oven." So I said, "That's what I'm gonna do." He said, "You're crazy."
I remember, and I was young. I had to be, I'm 33 now. It had to be at least 9, 10 years ago I was working for you. But I remember you being so particular. I remember like when I tried out, and then like during like my training session, I remember you sitting on that chair and looking over me, and you were so particular about
the sauce, how it went on and everything.
Let me tell you why
I hired you. I was making pizza at the time, which I did up until about 4 years ago. And I see this guy at the bar, Nino, and he's looking a little menacing. And I said, I better hire him because I'm afraid of him. So I hired him, and sure enough, I was afraid of him. But I said, "Look, Nino, there's one alpha male here."
I didn't feel like you were afraid of me at any point that I was working for you. You definitely played that off really well. I was like a lot more afraid of you. I remember like going out to smoke a cigarette, and I was like, "All right, I'm about to get in like trouble right now."
So we became friends out of that.
Yeah.
And that's.
No, definitely. Like, you as an operator, like, you're... have been such an inspiration to me, like, as an operator. Like, eventually, like, you know, I got my own places and everything, but, like, I learned so much because, like, especially even... And I think, like, it was definitely reinforced after I, after I opened my own business and after we became, like... Friends, we weren't working together because I saw this other side to you that I never saw. And I was like, "Yo, he's the tough dad. Like, he's the guy that's, he's a really nice dude, but he's knows what he's got to do for himself, for his family, for his staff, and he has to, like, take on this role." And, like, I kind of, like, saw the toll. Like, not, I wouldn't even say the toll, but, like, it takes something out of you to be the strong guy. You know what I'm saying? Like in The Godfather, like when Connie's talking to Michael and he's like, she's like, she makes up with him and she's like, "You know, I know I've been mad at you and blah, 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 but I know you were just being strong like dad." Like, that's how you run your restaurant. And it's, you know what I'm saying? It's admirable.
Come over here, sit on my lap. Come on. Nino. Yeah. Nino took me to a pool hall.
Yeah. Oh, that's a
Nino
story.
Nino took me to a pool hall, like a dive bar on the Lower East Side.
Dive bar on the Lower East Side.
We're waiting for the pool table.
Johnson's. Yeah, welcome to Johnson's.
And this couple is finishing up. It looks like they were finished, but they weren't finished. They walked away, and Nino grabs the table, and we're about to play.
Well, the 8-ball was done.
Yeah.
It was like the 8-ball wasn't there, the 9-ball wasn't there, yeah, so we walked up.
So the guy comes back and says, "I'm not through." So he goes, "Oh." Nino said, I thought you were through." And the guy takes his shirt off. So I'm in the corner watching. I said, "Oh, no, this is a fight."
Meanwhile, he's got a .38 revolver on. I'm more worried about him, like, than I am me. But yeah, he took it to another level. Yeah, definitely. He took off his jacket.
Momentarily, I'm Nino's bodyguard, but he really didn't need me. Because he had the cue ball in his hand. And the guy comes over to Nino, grinning like he's going to destroy him. And he got within an inch of his face, and Nino gave him the cue ball over his head.
And
then The next thing I know, I'm looking around. The bouncer comes over and breaks them up. Nino drops the ball like in the movie, and we walk out into the crowd. And I think I wet my pants. Not really. Not really, but...
That guy, I remember he had a crew. I remember walking by, like, the guys he was with that I was just like... Because I was in that mode. I was just like, yo, I'm not getting hurt, you know? Like, I don't want to hurt anybody in my life and this and that. Like, but I grew up, like, you know, where it was like, yo, you get hurt or get hurt. You know what I'm saying? So if somebody's trying to hurt you, you got to go all out. But I remember walking by his crew, and I was just like, yeah, you want to fucking do something? And, like, they were like, yo, get the fuck away from me. But, yeah, we went to, I thought I was fucking going to jail. Remember that? I was like, we went to Frank's, right?
Where'd we go?
We went to Frank's, Sputino in Park Slope.
Oh, yeah, we went to.
Yeah, we went there. You took me out for dinner afterwards to calm me down because you were like, yeah. I think you were thinking in your head, I think you were like, I'm not going to see Nino for a while.
So it blew over and the other guy got in trouble.
He did. He got, he got convicted of, like, raping a girl, like, about a month later. And somehow I became this, like, hero, even though, like, it had nothing to do with... One thing had nothing to do with the other, but, like, I became, like, this guy who beat up the rapist. Even though, like, I don't know how that works. But I remember after he got, like, arrested, all the bartenders, all the, like, hipster bartenders on the Lower East Side was like... Oh, can I get you anything? Like, here's a free Jack Daniels. Have a fucking great day. And I was like, this is great.
So a few weeks later, my daughter comes to me. She was hanging out on the Lower East Side. And she said she had a run-in with this guy. And it turned out to be Nino.
Yeah.
They had words because they're both...
Yeah, we didn't recognize each other. And, yeah, she was on the pool table. And I was just like, Yo, what are you doing? Get off the pool table. And she was being fresh. And we hadn't seen each other in so long. And then she was like, wait a minute, Nino? And I'm like, oh, shit, Valerie? Like, yeah. But, so, yo, let's get back on track with, like, Connecticut. So, okay. When did you open?
So
you opened this place.
Luna,
you got
pizza.
This Italian Mason. What? What are you laughing at? What? Look at the picture.
Nino at the pool hall?
Yeah. Nino at the pool hall. It's breaking shit.
So, Luna Pizza opened on Franklin Avenue. The old
1989,
the old Italian neighborhood. Got famous right away. It was the first restaurant in Hartford, Connecticut to have a line out the door.
Really?
It was incredible.
Now, how far away is Hartford from New Haven, where, like, Sally and
it's
Pepe...
It's a good hour
it's
away.
It's a good hour away.
It's a totally
away, so
different
nothing.
World.
Yeah. Hour away in Connecticut is a different world.
Yeah.
So you open up that first one, 1989, and then...
And then after that, people were coming from different towns, 30 minutes out each way, and they said, open up in our town. So I ended up opening up in all these towns. Before I knew it, there were 7 locations... Which I got too big for my britches.
Okay.
And it was overwhelming me with 7 locations, 125 employees. And I was doing it, but then something started to spin out of control in some areas, like the taxes and...
Taxes.
So I had to get out of town. At the same time, the Grimaldi visit was happening. So I sold 2 places. The government took 2 places.
Good old Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
Taking pizzerias from hardworking Americans.
So then opened in my hometown. They say you can't go back home. I came home, back to my hometown. And it's one of the most quietly famous, unknown, world famous pizzerias there is.
Yeah.
Without being in the New York Times.
No. Ignazio's is not, like, I know it and people know it. Like, but yeah, you're right. It's not like a Cat's Day. It's not like a Totono's. It's like an under the radar place that's fucking amazing.
It's not under the radar when the room is filled or
no,
but
the
close.
Rooms, that's the fucking thing, Mike.
With people from every country in the world.
You were supposed to be on this show earlier today, and you couldn't come because you had a line out the fucking door.
That's
you,
right.
I got a phone call from him. He's like, Louis's like, yeah, Nino, I know it's supposed to be there at 3, but there's like 20 people out the door. It's 70 degrees outside, so.
Another part of that was.
And what can you do? I get it.
The people from Tel Aviv were there today, and I was trying to negotiate the Tel Aviv location, which I'd love to do. And then you got to come with me. If that happens, you got to come to Tel Aviv.
I'm down.
They'll like me, but they'll love you.
Yeah. No, they'll love you too. We're going to dress you up. We're going to put like the Hasidic cheese hat on.
There.
Like, let's dress you up. You know what I'm saying? Let's put the.
So,
you can be the rabbi.
Back in the neighborhood.
Put the strings? What are the strings?
Back in the neighborhood.
The rabbi strings. What are those called?
Tassels.
Tassels?
Tassels on your clothes.
They're called, like on nipples? Like the nipple things are called tassels too,
be nice.
Right? I'm being so, nice. So, I'm like saying.
So, right now I'm under construction in Westport, Connecticut.
Okay.
And then I have a deal formulating. That's a big word. I have a deal underway in Darien, Connecticut as well.
So you're making the move back to Connecticut.
It's in the closeness of these towns. I used to be 3 hours up from, and I was out of town for like 28 years. But Westport and Darien is under an hour.
Right.
So from Brooklyn to Westport, it's easy.
Sure. So when you opened Ignazio's, I remember like, you got two daughters, Vanessa and Valerie, and they were in their early 20s at the time.
Yeah. They think they're my
mom. But they
mom
were working with you.
They're working with me.
They are your mother.
They think they're
they
my
mom.
They
are your mother.
They think they're my mom.
They are your mother.
They are, okay.
They are. No, they take care of you. I feel like they always have, right?
Yeah.
So what was...
They're trying to push me down a flight of stairs.
Yeah. I bet. So what was that like? Tell me about, like, you know, I mean, a true family business.
Well, at sometimes it was... I was forgetting that I was at work and I thought I was at home and I'm screaming my lungs out in an argument with family members in the dining room. The top of my lungs, my tonsils were wagging like Popeye's sweet pea.
Well, you have, you have very strict standards. You know what I'm saying? You're that type of dude. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's understandable. But, I've talked to Valerie over the years. I've talked to Vanessa here and there. Like, I've never heard nothing but, you know what I'm saying, good things. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, they... Like, you know, obviously it's rough, you know what I'm saying, working with family sometimes, but at the same time, it's like, you look back on it, you can never, like, you wouldn't trade it for the world. It is definitely what Valerie has always expressed to me when I see her out, like we're playing pool.
I used to be 7 days a week open to close. Now I'm 5 days, half a day.
5 days.
5 days, half a day.
Yeah.
And I love cooking for the crew. And
what's your like philosophy on like making great pizza? Like, how did you? I guess what I really want to ask is like, you know, you started this one place in 1989. You opened what, 7 other places in Connecticut,
right?
Before those shut down. I mean, where they weren't all the same as the original place. Like, you were expanding. That was in the 80s and 90s. But where you landed with pizza, is that the same pizza you were making at Luna Pizza? Or did you, like, kind of, like, want to step up your game? And
well, at Ignazio's, we're making Sicilian pizza. In Connecticut, I never made that because it wasn't working in a wood-fired oven.
Right.
So now we have a really great Sicilian pizza. And it's a memory of Rex Pizza, the coal oven Sicilian pizza from childhood.
That's where you're kind of drawing.
Yes.
Like
yes,
what you want to do.
Yeah.
But you're not only doing Sicilian pizza, you do rounds.
Yeah, we do the thin crust pizza. So my idea is that a lot of the pizzerias in the old days would buy just an average ingredient or the less expensive ingredients, but I told my father, I said, Dad, I'm going to buy the best ingredients, the same that Mom uses to cook for us. And really, pizza makers out there in an average pizza shop, it's only a few pennies more for the better ingredient.
It really fucking is, man. So I try to tell people
that's
that.
The secret.
Like, the cheapest cheese you could possibly buy that's not expired, mozzarella, is $2 a pound. And, like, dope fresh mozzarella is, like, $3.75 to $4.25.
Yeah.
You know?
So father said, no, you're crazy. So when he came to my first restaurant in Connecticut that was filled to capacity, he was impressed and he said, you were right. It felt good to hear him say that.
No, 100.
And for his few remaining years, he worked for me.
Did he?
Yeah, he worked
for
me.
You put him in the chair?
I put him in the register.
He was like you are now.
Yeah.
On the register, like watching over, like, yo, get off your fucking phone.
I'm never on the register.
Get off your fucking phone. No, but it's like, get off your fucking phone. Like, you're in the chair. Like, so, yo, put the cheese on right. Put the sauce on right.
My father loved being at the... Ignazio was his name. That's why I named the restaurant.
Right. So, and you got the... check this out. He's got this right on his thing, the Trinacria. That's your logo, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an octopus similar to that. So, the pizza at Ignazio's is very similar to the pizza I made at Luna Pizza. It's almost the same pizza.
Okay.
Fresh mozzarella, extra virgin olive oil, grated fresh pecorino romano, basil, Italian plum tomatoes, or the really incredible Italian plum tomatoes.
Sure.
And
yo, simple. Like, I think that's what gets away from a lot of people. It's just the simplicity. Like, that's what makes Italian food so amazing. Like, if you go on Yelp or Google and you go down, like, you know, because they have like the thing where you can filter like different types of restaurants. Yeah. So you'll have like Chinese and Jamaican and diner and American and yada yada yada. On every one of those things, from like Grubhub to Yelp, like, there's quadruple more Italian restaurants than anything. It's like 1,400 Italian restaurants, 2 Caribbean, 5 African, like yada yada yada, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Chinese too is like a big thing. But I think what gets away from people is like, it's so easy to do. It's just about the ingredients. And like, keep it simple. Like, it's just tomatoes, basil, salt, pepper. Like, that's it. Like, you don't need to add all this shit.
We have one exception to this. My mother's from Texas.
Okay.
So I made a Tex-Mex pizza in memory of my mother. And I know how to do that because we went to Texas every year. We had the Tex-Mex food. And this pizza...
Oh, this is it? Oh, Mikia Papa. Oh, this is it.
This pizza is a natural sharp orange cheddar with a picante sauce underneath, black olives, chopped onions, fresh avocado, cilantro, and a honey dripping around the crust, and a family from hardcore Italian neighborhood, Dyke Heights. I was giving this to the employees for their lunch, and this family asked for a bite, and they just went crazy over it.
Really?
So this is an Italian family.
Okay.
Having Tex-Mex pizza, and they said, "What is this?" So now I want you to tell me.
Yeah. No. Let's cook it up, and then we'll make some espresso afterwards. That's got to be like.
So how are you gonna cook this right now?
Our oven is broken. Nobody knows why. It's just a thing. If we try to turn it on, all the power for like the whole block's gonna go out. So we got a little hot plate. So there's some like Nino like ghetto rigging shit right here. So this is called a searsaw. I don't know if you've ever seen one of these, Lou. But this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna light this up.
Don't light me up.
And this is gonna be the top heat. Alright, turn that off. Oh my bottom to get hot. I'm gonna eat some of this. So, yeah, we gotta make the espresso too. Oh, I didn't show you this. I specifically kept this away from, I specifically kept this away from Louie because I know it's gonna fucking blow his mind. Like, he was like, what's that, what's that? I'm like, wait. So I got my little espresso. We did this last episode, but we're gonna do this every episode. So, you know the Maganat?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, your grandma had it, this or that. But this thing's like a little bit different from your grandma's thing. This thing, I'm gonna show you. Put her coffee on. All right. Oh, everything.
What's it called for you?
Oh, I don't know. What did Tom say? No, Tom said something that, like, it was like espresso, two cup or something like that. So instead of the pot, it's this. And then we got our, you played La Scopa before, right? The Italian cards?
Yeah.
So we got a little espresso cups. Yeah, with the Scopa. And then you just throw it on. It's like my favorite thing. And by the way, yo, pull up the name on them because, yo, any of you who know anybody that worked for this company, all right, we need to immediately contact them and they got to start giving me money to like produce this show so I can produce better content.
Belletti.
Like right away. Belletti. All right, Belletti. All right, send me a check. All right, I'm in Brooklyn. Just hit me up on Facebook. Belletti. Bialetti Espresso, call me up because I'm sponsoring your shit all day. I love your products. People are going to buy more of it from Amazon and give Jeff Bezos more money, which is fucking fantastic.
Go wake up and die right.
Wake up and die. He should wake up and die right that moment. Oh, all right. We're getting hot.
How's the cooking go?
Yeah.
We're getting hot. I don't know, man. I mean, like, I don't know. I turned it off.
Why?
That's the problem. So this is what we got. We got, I'm being a tutoro. Yeah, let's talk about it. Yeah, we brought that up before. I haven't been saying tutoro enough lately. Yeah, so tutoro, that's our Italian word of the day, is tutoro. Right now, Nino Caniglio is being a tutoro. Because he's, it kind of means like, you know, you don't have all your cups in your cupboard type of thing. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're missing some marbles. You know what I mean? You know, when you don't have your cups in your cupboard, you have an incomplete set.
It's in an affectionate way.
Huh?
It's not nasty. It's affectionate.
It depends on who you're talking to. It can be nasty. It's kind of like Mo and Momo. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'm like, stop being a Momo, that means like, you know, you didn't show up on time, but it's like affectionate. But if I'm sitting at L&B Spumoni Gardens and I see some, you know, guys we don't like, then I'm like, you know what I'm saying? By guys we don't like, guys I'm fighting with, I'm like, hey, look at these Momos over here chilling with those girls. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they got to take a hike. And then Mo is just like saying, yo. Mo is like, oh, what up, Mo? What's going on? How we doing? You know what I'm saying? Just like guy on the street, whatever. So, yeah, I don't think... The only thing I'm worried about with this is the avocado. We should not heat the avocado,
don't heat the avocado.
So what do you think? I should take it off?
No. Go around
it. I got like
it.
Tweezers. I'll go around it with the sears off. With the sears off. What do you think about this thing? This thing's pretty sweet, right?
That's what the chefs use, right?
Yeah, I guess so. It's, yeah. It's like a bain-marie, but it's portable. You know what I mean? Great for melted cheese. Yeah.
My beard.
If you want to like shave your beard, like in like a really like, you know, fashionable way. You know what I mean? You could use it for that. You know, you could like tie people up, and you know what I'm saying? Just like hit them with it a little bit, like cook them.
Nino.
Yeah.
Eat.
I mean, we gotta heat it up. I wanna...
Warm is good enough.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Cut it in half.
All right, we're gonna cut this up. Oh. Here, all right, let's sit on the top real quick. Stuff. I'm gonna have to shave off a little slice for
Don't mention that word to me.
For
Shave.
Oh no. I gotta cut off a little slice for Shaylin too. So Shaylin is beautiful Shaylin brand that's behind all the amazing stuff we're doing behind the scenes that I can't see, making fun of me on the internet. She's as white as she is, as porcelain as she is. She's not even white. She's like clear. But she's actually, what, like half Mexican, Chet? Yeah, Shaylin's half Mexican.
Yo, well, then you got to have a piece of this.
Where she's from's insane because it's all Mexican dudes. It's all Mexican. Like if you go to like a Costco or a Target or a supermarket, it's all Mexican people. But they're all like Trump supporters because like they've been here for a while, I guess. So they don't want anybody else coming over. And like, it's weird. It's a very, very strange thing I saw out in El Centro, California. All right. Here we go. You ready? You want a full or you want to have? I'm going to do one of these. Where can I go? Which camera? This one?
No.
So this is, well, we're not in focus. All right, this is the guy. So what is this? Tell me one more time.
It's a Tex-Mex pizza with a sharp cheddar, orange cheddar, natural, jalapenos, a picante sauce, cilantro.
Oh, wow.
Black olives, honey, chopped onion. This is five bones.
Drop them, Tom. It's literally like, I almost feel like I'm like closing my eyes. I don't feel like I'm eating pizza. I feel like I'm at a Mexican restaurant eating some delicious shit that I don't know what it's called. Like
in El Centro.
I never ate Mexican food in El Centro. I had your version. I had your version of Chinese food, which was delicious and weird. I had Sizzler and I had pizza, an original pizza.
Culinary adventure.
It was. It was a trip down like the old school. I threw up in the dumpster after, in the back of the pizza, true story. After the pizza. Yo, this is really amazing though. It's like, it takes you to a different place. And the cornichon on this is really, really great.
So you go through some heat, a little heat, but at the end, the crust is drizzled with honey to give you a little break in the heat.
Wow. So, do you smoke pot? Nah. Or
back in the Woodstock days I did, but now no.
No, yeah, you don't. So I don't know if you know about my brother, but
is that my shadow then?
I'm trying to we're plugging my brother in every episode. So guys, every episode of the Pizza Podcast by Brooklyn Pizza Crew, we're gonna be giving away let's throw
screen,
this on.
Screen.
What's that? Yeah, we're gonna be giving away products from my brother's website at techstop.com. It's like the second or third. Look at this thing. My little brother started this thing like a few years ago. He now has a 25,000 square foot warehouse in Edison, New Jersey. And it's fucking amazing. They do sell incredible volume. They're like one of the biggest online head shops in the country. And it's like an amazing thing. So yeah, Louis Caniglio is giving away stuff. Guys, if you like, share, and comment, you'll automatically be entered into a raffle for some free Dankstop gear. And if you guys, you know, thanksstop.com for all your fucking weed needs and whatever that stuff is. I don't smoke weed, but I know a lot of yous out there do. Louis doesn't smoke weed, otherwise we give him something, but, you know, we'll give Louis something else. You know? Give him, like, I don't know.
What are you going to give Louis?
We're going to give him a beer, I guess.
Got a nice Brooklyn right here.
He's got it. We're going to give him an espresso. Louis getting an espresso today on for coming down here. All right, so.
Louis T.
Let's get back to it, Louis T. So, you're... You're in Connecticut. Oh, Shailen Brand. Here, take some of this.
Come on.
Let me try too.
Yeah, you guys. You guys take this off of my hands. It's fucking amazing. I can't wait.
I'm not saying another word until they eat.
Yeah.
So I have sort of a motto at the restaurant, which I like to tell people at the door if they're thinking about coming in or not coming in. So I said, if you'd like a longer line, it's around the corner. Okay? We have a reasonable line here. Also, if you don't like it, you don't pay.
Really?
That's my motto for 10 years. And not to blow my own horn, which I like to do, but I've got to... No one's taken me up on that in 10 years.
Wow.
So I go to the table, you know, after I tell them that. After I said, I'll talk to you after you eat. And I go over to the table, and I say, are you paying? And they say, we're paying. We love it.
Yeah, look.
Wow.
How fucking cool is that? This is what we're doing. This is going to be a regular thing. Every episode of the Pizza Podcast, we make our guest espresso with this amazing, whatever the fucking company name is.
Yeah, I want it.
Give me some money, you espresso company, and I'll... Violetti, give me your money, and I'm definitely...
Give me your money.
Give me your money, and I'm definitely going to remember the name of your company. Like, right after you give me some money.
That would be good at a restaurant table.
It would, yeah. I actually had Pizzeria Del Corso, my first place.
You doing it?
Not with this one, but with the regular ones, with the pot ones. Yeah. I had different sizes, and, like, that's how I would serve the espresso.
That's great. That's beautiful.
Have you ever been to the Belmont Tavern in New Jersey?
No.
Yo, this fucking Jersey dude, Scott from, he's got like a big tow truck company called Scott's Towing. He took me there last year. It's this old school place, and they invented a dish called the Chicken Savoy, like back in like the 1960s or something like that. But I gotta take you over there. It's amazing. It's like, they have like, they do, you know the Neapolitan pots that you flip over?
Yeah.
So that's a coffee. It's $9 for the pot. And then they have cavatelli, everything family style. And then they have like, you know, the veal and the chicken. But it's like, it's kind of like that place two times. Yeah, take one. Grab that shit.
I want to go there. It sounds good.
Bang. Salute. And we got the little like.
Salute.
Salute. I got to wait for it to cool. Put this down, but yeah, Belmont Tavern is.
What town is that?
Belmont. I think it's called Belleville. The town. Yeah, it's like on Bloomfield Avenue. Yeah that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yo, this place is nuts. Look at this thing. It's like. Yeah, you go to the old school bar, and then, like, see if you get another picture, like, the back, or the food or something. It is incredible. Anybody that's not been there has got to go there. Yeah, that's the front of the place. Yeah, that's a Chicken Savoy. Yeah, you guys, yeah, that's a pasta. Let me, like, duck out of the way. Get it in the shot. I'm out of the way. Yeah. It's incredible. Family style place. Anyway. Now you're on your way back to Connecticut.
Yeah.
How do you feel about, like, I mean, I've been having, like, I can never leave New York, like, completely. But Yo, it's fucking rough right now. Like, for the restaurant business.
I looked at a location that I loved last week in Greenpoint. Okay. Williamsburg on North 6th Street between Wythe and Berry.
Okay.
The two-story building with a facade from 1890. This red stone with carvings. So I called the brokers from Bensonhurst. A nice Jewish boy. We talked, and he said, it's $35,000 a month. So I said, listen, I wouldn't even pay half of that.
Yo, this whole market is going to crash because this is what you got to understand about what's going on right now is that Williamsburg became Williamsburg because, you know, it's proximity to the city. The hipsters moved in, then the yipsters moved in, then the yuppies moved in, yada, yada, yada. But what that was it was like creating business. You know what I'm saying? Like, all the restaurants were packed. These guys were out 7 days a week. And now, with the rents, with the residential rents, and it was inexpensive. But now it's more expensive than Manhattan. It's been that way for a while now. And what happened was, now the people that are able to afford those rents, they don't go out 7 days a week. They're not throwing down, like, 10 drinks a night like the kids before them were. That was driving this business and driving the economy.
They're having babies with the strollers.
And they're also, like, even the ones without kids. Like, if you could afford $3,800 to $10,000 a month rent, like, you're working. Like, I don't care. You're not. There's no way to be, like, independently wealthy, like, as, like, a majority to do that. Like, you're making $250,000 a year. You're working fucking 5-6 days a week. You're not going out all fucking night. You're waking up at 7 a.m, 8 a.m, like, and going to work. And now the businesses are feeling that. And I'm okay. I got Williamsburg Pizza. Like, I'm fine because everybody, it doesn't matter, rich, poor, doesn't matter. You're going to order pizza to your house. Our main business is in deliveries. But these bars and these restaurants that are paying like 15, 20K plus a month, they're not doing what they were doing 5 years ago. It's a fucking problem. Now the L train's about to shut down, forget about it.
Bedford Avenue retail is so difficult.
300 square.
And there's empty stores there. And how can a small business make it at $35,000 a
they
month?
They can't. And that's why it's Whole Foods. That's why it's Apple. That's why it's like these giant companies that... That's a new flagship location. It's not Fifth Avenue anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's Bedford Avenue. And they're writing that off on their marketing budget. They're the only ones that can afford it. Everybody else is getting hit over the head. I'll make a prediction right now on air. I think this shit is going to crash on its head. I think there's going to be a lot of losers. There's going to be some winners. But I think
when the market crashes and the economy is bad, everybody has to eat pizza.
Oh, 100%. That's what I mean. I don't have to worry about any of this, but, like, I hope to save enough money to, like, when the blood's on the street, like, I want to buy up because these houses that are going for 1.2 are going to drop to 600. They're going to go back up, but they're going to drop because, you know, the market is what the market is. If the rents start dropping down and people, like, yo, you know how cool the Upper East Side is right now? The Upper East Side is on fire right now because the Q train opened up. Bro, you go to bars out there, it reminds...
I really don't know what's going on outside of Ignazio's.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, it reminds me... Well, when you were in the Lower East Side with me, when I was taking you out there, it's like that, but even, like, more. You know what I'm saying? Like, where the Lower East Side's not like that anymore. The Lower East Side's, like, dead. Like, it's just... But everything's changing, but, like, it reminds me of that. Like, you go to a bar, there's fucking girls, there's guys, everybody's having a good time, people are drinking, they're getting loose, you know? It's like, it's a party, and that's what people want to be around, you know? I don't care what age you are.
My father, Ignazio, he was born in the building on Stanton Street between the Bowery and Christie. The rent was $9 a month.
You can imagine. There was a
young woman and a family that lived next door to him. The mother was born in the house. The daughter was born in the house. She's my age. They were there their whole lives, and she's paying $35 a month today. Her neighbor's paying $3,000 a month. This is Stanton Street.
Bro, it's out of control. It's
$35 a month.
What it is sustainable. Where do the dishwashers live?
Yeah.
Where do the waiters live? Where do the pizza guys live? You know what I mean? Like, how do you fuel the animal that's in New York? Like, you can't have 10 rich people for every poor person. Like, it just doesn't work like that. And now, you know, it was like Williamsburg, and then it went out to Bushwick.
Yeah.
And, you know, they made massive land grabs at Bushwick. Now, it's not Bushwick to East New York. It's Bushwick to Austin. It's Bushwick to Charlotte. It's Bushwick to Las Vegas. It's Bushwick to all these secondary cities and third cities in America that, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're, bro, Charlotte's fucking cool. I was down there.
Yeah.
Nashville's fucking cool. They have great restaurants and you could, like, buy a house. Oh, thank you, my love. Shailen Brand feeding my cigarette habit.
No.
Real bad habit. Real bad habit I got.
Well, that's pretty much the history of Ignazio's and Luna Pizza. And I'm revisiting Connecticut.
If you had, like, one thing, like, advice, like, somebody getting into the pizza business and that's already into it, like from, like, an operating standpoint, like, what would you give them? What would you say?
Use the best ingredients. Don't take the shortcuts, because the shortcut is you're shortchanging yourself. It's only a few pennies more for the very best quality ingredients. That's one thing that I would say. And an owner should be there a reasonable amount of time.
Okay.
And it's when you're making the great pizza that you love, it's no longer work. All the good pizza men know that.
I feel you on
even
that
Even if
one.
you're in nonstop labor, you're getting rewarded financially, but you're rewarded because it's a fun, enjoyable day, screaming at your employees.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
They know I'm a tough boss, but I think they know I got a good heart.
No, you definitely got a good heart.
Customers almost always right. Not almost always.
Are they?
No.
Yeah. I don't know if I can get down with that one, but.
But if you're from Brooklyn, they're afraid of you anyway.
Yeah. We got to keep them afraid. Yo, listen, this was amazing. I'm so happy you came. Guys, make sure you check out Ignazio's in Brooklyn, Dumbo, right under the Brooklyn Bridge. It's next to the old Pete's Tavern. What's the address?
4 Water Street.
4 Water Street.
We're directly under the bridge.
You got the park right there. There's that ice cream shop is still there.
Yeah, directly across is the ice cream, the River Cafe. If you can't find the Brooklyn Bridge, get lost.
Yeah, that's right. It's under the Brooklyn Bridge. That's what Dumbo means. Down under the Manhattan Bridge.
It's really the waterfront.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And that park that they built there is amazing too. But, guys, thanks a lot for watching. Louis, thank you so much for being
Nino,
on.
Thank you too.
Absolutely. And make sure you guys like, share, subscribe, comment on this video. Anything you guys think we could be doing better, or people we should talk to.
Ignazio's. Nino.
And make sure to check out Brooklyn Pizza Crew on Facebook and YouTube for like some of our other videos. We're going to do one with Louis soon. And we'll see you later. We're cutting in a minute because Drew's coming down. So we're not cut yet, but we're almost cut.
All right,
we're almost cut.